It feels so good to get unfiltered and unfettered. And now, here's Tony and Fran.
And welcome to Unfiltered and Unfettered, the podcast. This is your co-host, the bully opinionist, Tony, along with the snow dog, my other co-host, Sir Francis One, the Pope of the podcast. Kiss the ring, Fran. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. Got my sled dogs out and made the trip to West Knoxville to come to the studio.
Got out and played with the kitties in the snow a little bit.
Yes, yes.
We had a little bit of snow in Knoxville.
They enjoyed it. I didn't, but they
did. So we've got a big show tonight. I think we got some interesting things. We're going to talk about the State of the Union. We got some It's a Conspiracy, some ripe Are You Kidding Me segments, a little MSNBC, who we'd love to pick on. And do we want to remind our listeners that this podcast is 100% made in the United States.
It is.
And it is also gluten-free. Because I know that
I did not know that
there is right. It's that's a big thing now, gluten free. So you won't get any glutens listening to the podcast. Not that I really know what a gluten is.
And no MSG, right?
That's another good point.
Motto: sonio glutamate.
MSG free and gluten free. So it's almost like health food.
Yeah, you don't have to exercise if you listen to our podcast.
That's right. That's right. All right, lots of good stuff. Let's get started.
Okay, boys, let's get started. Give me both barrels and shotgun that news.
First up, we're going to talk about the State of the Union address later, but we had a little incident after the State of the Union. Well, almost ready for primetime WWE action.
Michael Grimm, a congressman from New York, Republican, was doing an interview afterwards. I guess he didn't like the reporter's questions. This was a live interview. And you know, Tony, you and I worked live television in the Air Force for 2 years. What do they always tell you?
Never say anything you don't want your mama to hear.
Right. You're always live.
That's right.
Don't ever say anything you don't want people to hear. You're always live. He did not heed that warning and threatened to break the reporter in half like a boy and then throw him over the balcony of the second floor of the Capitol building. Apparently because he didn't like some of the questions that were being asked. Now, this guy is about to lose his seat in his district, probably. And so I guess he's feeling the pressure of that. But this was supposed to be a non-pressure night, so I'm not sure. Like, you know, we were talking before, it's not like he just batted away the winning touchdown pass that sent him to the Super Bowl. I'm not sure what he was worked up about, but threatened his dude on live television.
Yeah, he apologized, though. They're going to go to lunch.
Yeah. I lost my composure. Really? You lost your composure?
Yeah, really.
Really? Is that what you think happened?
All right, Congressman Grimm getting a little grim. We are on top of the Super Bowl. We've actually made our picks already. We've both picked Denver. I've picked Denver. You picked Denver, right?
I did.
You got a score prediction? I got one.
Yeah, I'm going 27-14 Denver.
I'm going 35-27 Denver. Okay. That's what I'm going
to
do.
I was listening to Dan Marino today. He made a good point, I think, that if Denver scores first, if they get the ball and score first, that's going to put the pressure on Seattle. It could actually – his feeling is that if Denver scores first, they're going to score early and often, and it could be a big blowout.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we'll see. Interesting. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, next. Fran, your girl Lindsey Vonn, not in the Olympics.
Yeah, not as an athlete. They NBC smartened up, and they were going to bring her on as an analyst for all the skiing events. So it'll be interesting because she's – I don't know if you ever heard her do interviews. She's slightly unfiltered. We should probably have her on the podcast.
I would love to if you can make that happen.
It would be interesting to see her take on other skiers and how non-politically correct she's going to be on the air. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go. But a good addition to the team, I think.
Lindsey Vonn reporting on the Olympics. All right, next. Okay, you know one of the things I like to say about Jay Carney, Fran, you're no Ari Fleischer.
Yeah.
But him.
And let me tell you, if you're saying that, you really suck if you're going to say that.
But Jay Carney and Major Garrett getting into a little bit, which they have done kind of repeatedly.
Well, and this, again, another lesson that we learned, although not from being in the Air Force, but from our parents, the more lies you tell, the more crap you got to remember.
Right.
And let's just face it, they've been lying about this Obamacare in in smaller facets. It's not like a conspiracy, but they're just fudging all the numbers. And so they put out that 7 million had signed up. It came out actually in the draft of the State of the Union, and that came out days earlier to the reporters. So Major Garrett wants some clarification. Did 7 million people actually register or sign up? That's a distinction, because you could sign up without actually registering for Obamacare. You can create a profile without actually buying health care.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a difference. I mean, to say that 7 million. So when Garrett brings this up, Carney says, well, I never said that. Well, Garrett, you know, he ain't a cub reporter. I mean, you know, he's not probably the sharpest tool in that room, but he's not an idiot. He whips out transcript, whips out draft of the State of the Union, and says, right here, Jay, you said 7 million registered for Obamacare. And then there's this, of course, the awkward 7 seconds of silence, and then the Carney starts doing his tap dance, and blah, 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 we'll have to check on that.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. Check on what? You lied, Jay. Right. Just say it. For God. I mean, because does anyone even care anymore that he lied? I mean, I think we're expecting that at this point. It's just bizarre. Just bizarre. But Garrett, credit him, he was ready. You know what I mean? He had that stuff right there,
right,
knowing that Carney's going, oh, I never said that.
You know, I mean, I don't like Jay Carney. I mean, it's hard to like the White House press secretary, no matter who you are. I would not want his job for anything. I really wouldn't.
There's a reason guys don't stay as long as he stayed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's burning out, number one. I don't know if you've watched the press conferences. Yeah. You can watch him on C-SPAN every day at 4 live. He's burnt. Secondly, again, the lies are stacking up like kindling, and he's tripping over them. And, right, and this is a prime example. I mean, is this a major thing? No. But when a reporter pulls out your own words and throws them back at you, you know, in a room full of your peers, that's just bad. It's time to move on, I think.
Yeah. All right, next. As mentioned in the show opening, we had a little snow in Knoxville and a lot of snow across the South.
Oof. It, we've not handled it well. I mean, Knoxville, not too bad, but I mean, we had a lot of schools out and a lot of people had a hard time getting home, but they got home the night of the storm. Atlanta, them people, I mean, you know, there were kids sleeping in buses on the interstate, had to go back. Some got back to the school and managed to stay overnight.
Had people sleeping in Home Depots and
Chick-fil-A's.
Drugstores.
Chick-fil-A was out delivering free food out onto the interstate to people.
You know, when they talk about in the South, it's the big joke, even among people that live in the South, right? Well, as soon as the weatherman says snow, everybody starts rolling up and goes going home. That's why.
Right.
That's why.
And that's the problem. My sister, of course, all my family lives in Jersey, so they're used to this. Here's my sister tagged this problem immediately. In Atlanta, they just shut everything down at once and sent everyone home. Schools, businesses, you know, government. In Jersey and in the Northeast, they stagger that. So when the schools let out, then they let out, you know what I mean?
Well,
to try and avoid some of the issues that they had, because Atlanta's traffic is nasty anyway, and then you add snow to it, for God's sake.
That is a keen observation. You know, because they had streets that they couldn't clear because they had too much traffic on them. But, you know, it was, I mean, relatively speaking, it wasn't that much snow. It's just that in the South, you know, for example, in Knoxville, we get snow once, twice a year maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't make no sense to spend a whole lot of money on snow removal equipment for something that doesn't happen. You have to, and I've said this for 6 or 7 years, if you live in Knoxville, there's 1 or 2 days a year that you're just going to have to stay home. And you just got to get used to that.
And a 4-inch snow is a huge event here.
Yeah.
You know, and this is to all my family, Jersey. Shut up. I mean, I get it. You're in the North. We're in the South. We don't get this weather. So
coupled with the fact that you have people that just aren't used to driving in that kind of weather.
And add to that, we've had sub-zero temperatures here. That's never happened in the time that you and I have been here.
Right, right, absolutely.
But there was a chilling picture on Twitter where a guy put up the shot from Atlanta and then the opening picture from The Walking Dead where the sheriff is riding back into town after the zombie apocalypse. They're almost mirror images, dude. It was chilling.
All the traffic going out, none going in.
And of course, all the cars were stopped because everyone was dead. Oh my gosh, it was chilling.
Yeah, that was cool. Okay, next. All right, pop culture blast.
This is my favorite story. So the White House has this online petition system where you can petition for things, and if you get 100,000 signatures, the White House in their own rules of engagement, says if you get 100,000 signatures, we will respond to this. They've had to respond to building a Death Star,
right,
which they put out a pretty a nifty response to that, I thought. They've had to respond to why we don't have lightsabers, that type of stuff. So now there's a petition to deport Bieber. That had 100,000 signatures like within an hour. You know, he's Canadian, so yeah, he's right. committed crimes here. That makes him eligible for deportment under our law. And so now the White House has to respond because it got well over 100,000 signatures to deport Justin Bieber. Although I think he took the Mitt Romney plan and self-deported because today he turned himself into Toronto police for an assault charge. And he was formally charged today in Toronto with assaulting someone. So probably a photographer, I would assume, but because yeah. I don't follow this idiot. But he got caught for, I think, DUI here, right? Is that not what happened?
Well, yeah, and then they were drag racing or something.
Right,
yeah.
Drag racing, right. That was the other thing. So, yeah, so the White House is going to have to respond to this petition to deport Justin Bieber.
Nice. All right, send him back to Mexico.
Let's get hardcore.
All right, Fran, some things are necessary, some things are painful.
Yeah.
This is just kind of painful.
Some things are unnecessarily painful, and that's what the State of the Union is. It's unnecessary.
So tonight's Hardcore Politics, obviously we're going to chat a little bit about the State of the Union speech. Generally hailed as pretty unremarkable.
Oh.
He really didn't have anything to say.
Yeah, I think Charles Krauthammer put it best, you know, this was a pretty small ball type speech because he really had no option, like you say.
Right.
I mean, what else is he going to do? I mean, the trust in him is so low at this point. He's juggling five different controversies, whether he wants to acknowledge them or not. What's he going to ask for? I mean,
the only thing that he said that maybe piqued my interest was when he talked about the My RA thing.
Yeah.
Which is, a way for people to build retirement accounts.
Right.
I thought, well, okay, that's an idea that I would have liked to have maybe heard more about.
Well, he did a speech on that the next day. But that's a largely conservative idea.
Yeah.
Privatizing, you know, because it right, leans on privatizing retirement.
It's basically saying Social Security ain't enough. Better do
right,
something
which it never was intended. I mean, my father worked in it for 40 years. It was always intended to supplement your retirement, never to be a living wage.
Some of the ridiculous, you know, politicians need to stop talking about climate change. I mean, they just need to stop
talking
about
it. Oh, right, he did. He declared it's a fact.
It's
that's
a fact.
It.
You know what? I got no problem with that. Climate change, you know, I even wrote a blog post about it one time. You know, we had climate change during the Ice Age, killed all the damn dinosaurs.
Right.
I mean, there were no humans back then. But two things I won't do. Number one is white guilt. Number two is environmental guilt. I recycle.
What was the first one?
White guilt.
Oh, okay.
White guilt and environmental guilt. I'm not going to feel sorry because I'm alive.
Right.
It's like, we got climate change because we're all living on the planet. What do you want us to kill ourselves?
So it was kind of a nebulous statement. Like, yes, well, climate change is a fact. That's true.
Yes.
The question, I think, and there are probably some people who would even debate that, you know, and the dopes would say, oh, look at all the snow. There's all that climate change, which is really an idiotic statement. But there is climate change. I believe firmly in that. The question is, are we the ones causing it? I think that's the debate. Is it a man-made thing? And is there anything you could do about it?
Right.
So those are the debates to me.
Now, I got no problem if you just want to say, look, let's be good stewards of our planet.
Right.
Let's be environmentally conscious and let's all take care of things. I'm down with that. Right? I do. I don't throw my bags out the window. I don't.
You'll make that Indian cry. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yes, yes. Yeah, the crying Indian. That was an old one. That's a good reference. That's a good drop there. You know, I mean, I'm not jamming my ass into a Prius, but, you know, other than that, I try to, you know.
I think we all appreciate you're not jamming your ass into a Prius.
Well, we need to do a conspiracy bit on that sometime.
Oh,
Because I have big questions why I can remember my father bringing home the first color TV, and now I have a phone that does everything. But I'm still driving a car powered by basically the same engine they invented in the 1800s.
Right.
How is that possible?
Right.
You know how it's possible? The oil industry.
Right, that's right.
Okay, but anyways, back to the State of the Union speech. Anything else stand out for you?
Yeah, I mean, this business with the Sergeant First Class, that stuff just, you know, he had him stand up. This guy's, I mean, just brutally.
Right.
In most cases, lesser men, that would have been mortal wounds that this guy suffered. And even the conservative media kind of fell in love with that moment for the same reason that it's all just dog and pony. And this kind of ties into everyone standing up and sitting down, right? All these congressmen stand up for different things. All you have to do is say the word military, and everyone in that chamber jumps to their feet.
Right.
Because they don't want to be caught on camera not standing up.
That's right, yeah.
So even Fox was like, when the president detailed his friendship, and that, I believe, is authentic, the friendship with this guy. There are plenty of pictures of the president with this guy before he was wounded. But everyone kind of was like talking that up. But what everyone seemed to miss in that story, you know, and you and I have talked about this, he was on his 10th deployment.
Right.
His 10th deployment. The Army deploys for a year at a time. This guy has been there for 10 freaking years. And no one seems concerned with that. He was face down in a ditch, wounded, on his 10th deployment.
Right, right.
Somebody needs to start doing math around there, because that can't be. That is a crime. I mean, that's a travesty. How can that be that we are in a war where this dude is only a sergeant and he's been there 10 times?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
It just blew my mind that no one was picking that thread, that no one was pulling at that, saying a war that we got into under suspicious circumstances by one president and sworn to be ended by another president, and you have a sergeant first class on his 10th deployment where he almost died.
Right.
That's criminal to me. Just criminal.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, they all do the dog and pony, which I can't stand anymore.
True.
They all do the hey, Helen Keller from Topeka, Kansas, got her sight back to Obamacare kind of stuff. I mean, that's just all a bunch of crap. Yeah. And I hate it when they make argument by anecdote. Look at this one person who Obamacare helped.
Out of country of billions, right? We got one person. But one of the other lighter moments outside of the fist fight that took place afterwards with the reporter,
right,
was the Joe Biden, John Boehner show behind.
Ah, beautiful. Old Uncle Joe.
Uncle Crazy Joe and the Earl of Orange going at it behind the president. You know, I mean, Biden, he either doubled up on his crazy pills or he cut them in half. And Boehner just looked like he had been sucking lemons all night.
I know.
Even when there was something on a line, an applause line, and they write these applause lines into these speeches, that was good for all Americans. Boehner barely gave a golf clap. Right?
I know.
Like, and everyone was like, hey, John, I mean, that's good for
everyone.
Well,
there was even one time when he stood up, when you could tell, man, he was grudgingly standing up. And I was thinking to myself, Boehner, just sit down, man.
Yeah.
Just sit down.
See, and that's it. He has the power there. It's his chamber. It's not the vice president's chamber.
Right.
It's his chamber, and he could say, hey, we're not standing up for anything. Everyone keep your seats.
And then old Uncle Joe smiling and waving and pointing
some
at somebody.
Creepy,
somebody show him a bottle of gin or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It was probably McCain playing nude poker on his cell phone. You know, and this brings us to the completely unnecessary. The speech, I don't know if a lot of people understand, the speech is not necessary. It's not a requirement. It's not constitutionally dictated. You know, this from time to time, the president shall arrive at the Congress to give a State of the Union. No one said that had to be an oration. It was in written form until I think John Adams gave the first speech. And then Jefferson, who then followed Adams, refused to do the speech. He sent it, the written copy, for his 8 years. And then in the 1900s, Woodrow Wilson revitalized the speech, and it's become the permanent spectacle that it is today. And it's just completely unnecessary because he never gave us the actual State of the Union.
Right.
This is all things I want to do. Well, you're a lame duck and no one believes you, so you're not going to get any of this crap. So what was the point of this again? 45 minutes so pundits can have a job? I just don't get it. I'm a jaded person when it comes to this thing.
No, I'm with you, man. But I think they all do it. It's worse when you disagree with the guy in the first place. So
right.
All right, State of the Union. We'll promise to pick up the hardcore politics next time. Secrets,
hidden power. You're just pawns being used by the government to spread their propaganda.
You think you know the whole story?
Back man. I'm a scientist.
All right, tonight's It's a Conspiracy, Fran. Now, up to this point, we've done some pretty tame stuff for It's a Conspiracy. Tonight might be the night where we step into the deep end of the pool.
Uh-oh.
So I want to talk a little bit about the NSA scandal, the whole information collecting intelligence agency in our country. So here's what we got, right? James Clapper testifies before a Senate subcommittee. Now, they're collecting information. They're collecting everything and anything. He lies to the Senate subcommittee, flat out, right? There's no disputing that. Is there disputing that at this point?
No, right. No, yeah, right. If he was collecting, he said no, and they are.
No. Okay. He's been a member of the intelligence industry for a long time. But I've got a couple points, and I don't know that it leads anywhere other than to ask some more questions. One, who asked him the question? Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Utah, who's on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, I know you're not probably familiar with the Senate Intelligence Committee, but they specifically, their actions are oversight over classified intelligence. That's what they do. So it's kind of like the fox asking another fox a question about the hen house. So that's my first thing. It's like, okay, who's answering the question? It's like, did you really not know the answer before you asked the question? And if so, why did you even ask the question? Well, it's a public hearing, and there could be a lot of motivations there. But I question whether they already knew or not. Well, I don't trust that they didn't.
Well, keep in the back of your mind, most of these guys are lawyers, and they live by the axiom, never ask a question you don't already know the answer to.
Yeah. These are no dummies. They're not supposed to be anyways.
Right.
Okay, so now Issa's coming out, Daryl Issa, Republican from California. He's calling for Clapper's head because Clapper is still there.
Right.
The White House comes out, and so Issa is saying, you know, this guy needs to be fired. The White House released a statement that said that Obama has full faith in Director Clapper's leadership of the intelligence community. The director has provided an explanation for his answers to Senator Wyden and made clear that he did not intend to mislead the Congress. Now, how can that be true? And who in the hell would believe that statement?
Well, I mean, you could parse the words "did not intend to." I mean, did he go in with the intention to lie, or did he just lie at the moment he got the question? I mean, there's no doubt that he lied. I mean, we know we settled that.
Yeah.
The question is, and I don't know that you could ever prove this, did he intend to go in there and say, if they ask me if we're collecting data, I'm going to say no? Or did he just choke under the moment of truth, and was he not expecting that question from the director, and then so didn't know what to do and he just lied?
Okay, I won't disagree with that, Fran.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that's the way it is. I'm just saying that's how they're going to twist that statement to say, no, he didn't go in there to lie, but he made a mistake, and then he explained himself later.
I don't disagree with your argument, but to me, that's like an expanded version of it depends on what the meaning of the word is.
No, I agree. I'm not defending the
NSA, I know you're not. I'm just saying, when you come out with a statement like that in relation to a guy that just flat out lied, where are we at here? Okay, now let's just move it forward a little bit.
All right.
Okay, because after 9/11, okay, I actually had this idea to write a book because this is what I thought could happen. I thought we're about one terrorist event away from the government possibly, let's say, shutting down the city of Washington, D.C. I mean, they could say if there's a bomb and they say we got a terrorist on the loose, they could declare martial law in Washington, D.C. Now, that might seem like a slippery slope argument, until you think about the fact that two knuckleheads stopped the city of Boston for a day.
Right.
Okay, so it's not far-fetched to say that...
No, it's happened.
It's happened. Okay, and that's almost like an aside to the argument. I'm just saying that when it comes to our intelligence committee and the use of it, things are starting to add up in a really bad way. So next, we've got... And this is almost a funny story. Without trying to make it sound ominous, a situation in North Dakota where a guy was accused of stealing some cattle. This is really what happened. The authorities went over there to say, you stole these cattle and we're going to arrest you or whatever. He backed them down. He was armed. This is Lakota, North Dakota.
Yeah, it's
not the middle of nowhere, but you can see it from there, right? He backs them down with arms, goes back into his farm. Apparently he's got a big farm.
the local authorities got the federal authorities to loan them a Predator drone to go and find this guy. So they used the drone to go and find out where this guy and the family was so they could go out there and find them and with a SWAT team and arrest them and get them there. So this raises some questions, and one of the questions is, was that illegal search and seizure by using a drone for law enforcement? It's a big legal argument, which I don't intend to address here.
Yeah.
But my question is, so Forbes magazine comes out and says between 2010 and 2012, law enforcement agencies have used CBB Predator drones for 700 civilian law enforcement missions. Now, these are Border Patrol, what do they call that? The Border Patrol Predator drones. Now, here's one question I have. We got Border Patrol. How many Canadians are sneaking into the United States every year? This is in North Dakota. North Dakota.
Maybe that's the only drone for the whole border.
they're surveilling the border at in north between North Dakota and Canada. I mean, are you shitting me? Really? So where did this drone come from? So I don't know, Fran. I don't really have a big summation statement. I'm just saying you got a member of the NSC lying to a committee that I don't even know. I don't know that they did or did not expect him to lie. He's lying to the guy that was the oversight committee.
Who seems perfectly okay with it.
Well, as we've discussed before, it seems like a lot of people seem to be okay with it. There's a few people like Issa, I can never say his right.
Dal Issa, California.
You know, I mean, he has a problem with it, and there's several other people. But this guy in March flat out lied.
Mm-hmm. Committed a felony, by the way. Yeah. Lying to Congress is a felony.
And he's still there with the support and endorsement of the president.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, is it a conspiracy? I don't know if it's a conspiracy, but odd facts about the way we're using intelligence in our country are adding up. Because as I mentioned to you before, Fran, I mean, if you think, now a Predator drone is the size of an aircraft, right?
Right.
If you think that they don't have drones that are the size of a pencil, or they're not on the verge of having those things, that it could easily surveil you or I or anyone else, if they've got 700 that they're using in law enforcement agency, do you think that they're just looking for the criminals? They're probably tracking everything. We already know that they're tracking everything.
Right, and the drones obviously would give them a closer view, obviously could listen, could take pictures, you know, right through the window of your house. I mean, absolutely have that technology.
So, I mean, I guess my summation is we're a bad incident or two away from a serious turning of the way our law enforcement is used in our society.
Well, and add that to the mix, the complacency of the general public, who don't seem to care about this NSA issue. They don't see, at least they don't care enough to get up and do anything about it.
Right.
You know, your phone data is being collected right now. This conversation that we're having is being stored in a server in Utah. No one seems to care. The government has everyone right where they want them. And it don't matter who the president is, because this is beyond the president. This is the government machine that has a public that's willing to accept what they say when it comes to national security.
And I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I see it on the verge of spiraling out of control.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly because can be.
The people that are supposed to be giving it oversight are not. I think they're part of the problem. Okay. Well, anyways, be looking for that in your nearest 7-Eleven.
I can't believe there hasn't been a knock on the door already. FBI will be rolling here any second.
Are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
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 Are you fucking kidding me?
Fran, what do you got for Are You Kidding Me tonight?
Mine's a little obscure. It just kind of unfolded on Twitter the other night. SodaStream, which is a company that makes this thing that you can make your own soda, and the two people I know that have them say it does taste just like Coke and Diet Coke and that type of thing. Their Super Bowl commercial was banned until they changed it, because in the commercial, Scarlett Johansson, who is their spokesperson, says the words, sorry Coke, sorry Pepsi, because they're... obviously, their product is going to outdo them.
Uh-huh.
So the Super Bowl people said, well, Coke and Pepsi are part of our sponsor, so you can't do that commercial. Coke and Pepsi themselves said, we're a trademark company. You can't use our name in the making of your own profit unless you compensate us. Well, SodaStream's not big enough to do that, so they're out of the Super Bowl their commercial, which seemed straightforward to me. I understood that completely. Now, I wouldn't mind seeing Scarlett Johansson in what appeared to be a T-shirt that was three sizes too small pimping this product. But that's beside the point. The majority of the people who are conservative that I follow on Twitter were up in arms about this. That the Super Bowl, they don't have the right, they don't have this. That, and when I would query these people, say, well, but Coke and Pepsi are companies that are part of the free market. And their brand is being used without their permission. You should be defending them. Like, as a conservative, you should be, you know. But here's the problem. The NFL business model is a socialist system, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. They spread the money around.
Right.
So generally, conservatives don't like the NFL because it does so well and because everyone gets an equal piece. Every team, no matter how bad their market is, gets an equal piece of the money. So I guess it's that framework that these people have problems with. And so whenever they make decisions, they being the NFL, conservatives seem to come out against it. But in this situation, it seems like they're shooting off their foot despite their leg, you know, or their toe despite their foot, I guess is the actual phrase. Two publicly traded companies on the free market are having their trademarks abused by SodaStream, and conservatives are saying they're okay with that. And I'm just stunned by that. Do you not even know your own, you know, conservative bylaws? Like, that's a free market that's getting screwed with their people.
Right.
Like, I don't get the anger at the Super Bowl for that. I don't get the anger at Coke and Pepsi protecting their brand. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I thought you could mention somebody else's product in your own commercial.
Like, not without permission. Got to have permission. And Coke and Pepsi said no. I mean, it's their trademark. It's their, their brand.
Yeah.
So they said no dice. And Super Bowl said no dice. They're our sponsors, and we're not going to let you do that. And,
well, yeah, they're big boys.
Yeah. I mean, money. This is what conservatism is about. Free market. Make money. Work hard. Build your brand. Don't let other people abuse you.
That's why Duck Dynasty went back to work, right? Money.
That's right.
All right. Mine, are you kidding me, comes to our old favorite network, MSNBC, fan, where Cheerios is putting out a commercial in the Super Bowl, and it deals with an interracial family. Interracial child, black man, white woman, depicted in the commercial. And MSNBC, on their Twitter account, tweeted out a thing that said, basically, I don't remember it verbatim, but basically it was like, conservatives are going to hate this,
yes,
but
right,
everybody else will say, aw, isn't that cute, right? So Reince Priebus throws a fit. Griffin, the president of MSNBC, issued an apology. They retracted it. But, I mean, again, are you kidding me? How many times, Fran, on this podcast have we talked about MSNBC doing something stupid and then apologizing for it later? How many times you got to apologize before you realize that the real problem is you got to quit doing it, right? It's not about the apology. You tweet it out there, especially for me, who's a very conservative person who has quite a few interracial relationships in my own family, and you said that? I just don't. Are you kidding me? Come on.
2 weeks MSNBC. Removed from criticizing Mitt Romney's biracial family.
Well, yeah.
That's the issue.
That's
right?
A great point.
That's
too,
the issue. MSNBC just criticized him, and yes.
And it had to issue an apology for
that. They should have foot and mouth disease.
In
by
which
now.
She, the young lady, issued a tearful apology over that, right?
Melissa Harris Perry, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, after she was castigated for a week.
Well, of course.
And they said, look, we fired three anchors in the last month. We can't fire you. You gotta go apologize.
We're gonna have to hire Leonardo.
That's right.
All right, that's Are You Kidding Me?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Tonight's top five list, and I thought you might sink your teeth into this, Francis. Top five historical speeches. You know, maybe that affected us or that are our favorites.
Oh, and I believe I have sunk my teeth in.
Yeah.
Because I have seven.
Yeah. I got five.
And I'm going to say right before we jump, I don't know what you're going to mention about this, but I'm, there's an individual out there. If you feel like you can make a better list, submit it.
Well, let's just address that just for a moment. I meant to address that at the top of the podcast. Because we both took some flack over our top five favorite sports movies.
Right. And I think the key word in that sentence is are. Like, that's my top five. Like, I'm not saying this is the top five greatest. That was mine, and yeah, we got
and,
some...
And let me just say this. You know, I'm so happy, Francis, that Rudy was not on your list, because you couldn't put a gun to my head and make me watch that movie, some Notre Dame snob getting to play one play.
Well, once Joe Montana debunked that whole
That's
thing...
That's right, yeah.
Right, he was a freshman that year.
And they and asked said, him about it just fiction. The other day, and he didn't back off of it either.
Right,
said,
no, that's right.
The way it
he
was.
Said, he goes, yeah, that's a lot of fiction. He said, there's none... Most of that wasn't true.
All right, so glad we cleared that up. So tonight, top five historical speeches. What do you got, Fran?
All right, my number five, Dwight Eisenhower, upon leaving office as president, the military-industrial complex speech, where he warns, but comes close to admonishing the public, don't fall asleep at the switch. The military and the liaison between the military and the industry in this country is going to create bad bedfellows. Everyone thought he was crazy. And look where we stand today. So he was onto something there. I don't think we heeded his warning, and now we have, you know, predator drones flying over our cities.
Well, yeah. Good point. Yeah. All right, my fifth is not really a historical speech, but I was like maybe 7 or 8, and I was getting beat up by a particular kid, and I got the speech from my father. And basically the speech from my father was, you know, there's no shame in running. Or, you know, you can pick up a rock and hit the kid in the face. But if you keep letting yourself get beat up, you're going to keep getting beat up. So you might want to, you know, the world's not fair. This is the way it is. Take a little bit of control. And honestly, that was, you know, I wrote a column. That was the last time I ever allowed myself to be bullied by anyone like that. And, again, it's not a historical speech, but I would have been remiss if I didn't mention it.
I'm good with anyway. The rock to the face.
All right, what's your number four?
My number four is Winston Churchill, We Shall Fight on the Beaches speech. This was to the House of Commons in 1940. This is when he was trying to rally England in the Battle of Britain. And, you know, that little island held off Germany long enough to get the U.S. into the war. And that was the speech that really really rallied the people and managed to do some miraculous things there.
Okay, my number four is, of course, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream. You know, just a major speech, a major turning point in our country. It's one that, you know, is often quoted. And so, you know, I think a list would be incomplete if it didn't have that on there.
All right. My number three is Lou Gehrig's Farewell to Baseball in Yankee Stadium, 1939. Of course, he knew he was dying at that point. I don't think a lot of the people in America knew he was dying, but at that point he knew he was going to be dead soon. From what we now call Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS. And, boy, what a great, I mean, a great speech. And it has that iconic line, you know, I consider myself to be the luckiest man in baseball.
Right.
Or on the face of the earth, rather. So that's my number three.
My number three is the Gettysburg Address. Just a historic time in our country. I couldn't recite the speech if you asked me to. But, again, just another speech that historically I think is considered a hallmark. So that's my number three.
All right, my number two is Ronald Reagan, and this was a speech he gave after the Challenger accident. This was in 86. You know, I guess we could debate presidents as orators, but this dude always seemed to be able to touch the right note at the right time. And that, in a country that was shocked by the suddenness of the death of 7 astronauts, he touched the right note at the right time, and it was a phenomenal speech.
Interestingly enough, my number two is by Reagan also. A different speech. Actually, my top two deal with the same kind of subject, if you will, at opposite ends. Because my number two is his Berlin Wall speech, where he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Which, you know, I will always credit Reagan with some responsibility for ending the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he didn't have everything to do with it, but I'm not one who says, well, just because it happened on his watch, you can't give him credit. No, I think that he engineered a lot of that. I think that was part of that. And like you say, he... you know, was an actor, had a knack for being able to deliver the right message at the right time.
Right, absolutely right. Yeah, I agree. All right, we're number one now, right? My number one is Teddy Roosevelt. This was a speech he gave in Paris in 1910 called Citizenship in a Republic. And he was really on an American exceptionalism binge, and this was where he talked about what I consider to be a very famous paragraph about hyphenated Americans and his disdain for hyphenated Americans. That a person can't call themselves an American if they have a hyphen in front of them, in front of the word American, and that was actually a jab at the French at that point, which they didn't pick up on. But that speech actually holds up today. You know, this hyphenation is really kind of ridiculous. Yeah. And so that speech always stuck out for me.
All right. My number one, by Winston Churchill. You've already cited a Winston Churchill. My speech by Winston Churchill was delivered at a small college in Missouri, in which he said, from Stettin in the Baltic, from Trieste in the Baltic to Stettin in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended on the across the continent, which that's where that phrase comes from. A lot of people don't know that Churchill actually coined that phrase in that speech, but that's kind of acknowledged as the beginning of the Cold War, and that's also where that phrase comes from, an iron curtain. Fran, you had two honorable mentions.
I could have had 30. I mean, this was, you know, my first honorable mention is Teddy Roosevelt again in 1883. This was in Buffalo, New York, where he talks about the duties of American citizenship, and this is kind of where he started his American exceptionalism that Republicans and Democrats alike seem to throw around with such abandon today. Really, I think they need to read this speech before they start popping off about what they think American exceptionalism, because their eyes, I think, would be opened to what that word really means. My second one is Patrick Henry. This is the Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech that he gave in Richmond in 1775, where he basically was exhorting the country to say, hey, war's here, fellas, so we got to fight. It's kind of like the speech your father gave. We can run,
right,
or we could pick up a rock. And I'm picking up a rock, even if it means I'm dead, because I'm living free. And that's the, to me, the keystone speech of the American Revolution.
All right, and that's Unfiltered and Unfettered's top five list, top five historical speeches.
Going forward, here's the deal. Let me be clear, so we must be clear. And so I want to be very clear here.
Just to be clear, 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 clear.
I also want to be clear about what we will not be doing. But make no mistake.
Make no mistake.
Make no mistake.
Make no mistake.
None of this will be easy.
It isn't easy.
It won't be easy.
It wasn't easy.
All right, tonight's episode of Know Your Obama.
I love that, man. It's just hilarious.
Is State of the Union speeches, Fran. I'm going to read quotes. I know we're beating this to death. But
I'm going to do bad here.
Maybe not.
5 years from now, I'll be able to parse this guy's words out, but right now I can't get a beat on him. So
we've done Senator President, we've done Crisis, we've done Who's He Talking About. Most of the time we do it with clips. Tonight I'm just going to read you quotes. And some of the quotes will be from 2013, State of the Union. Some of the quotes will be from 2014, State of the Union. So I'm only giving you two.
Last 2 years, okay.
I thought about going all the way back, but then I thought I wouldn't do that.
I don't think it's going to matter, but all right.
Okay, so here's the first one. We know our economy is stronger when we reward an honest day's work with honest wages. But today, a full-time worker making the minimum wage earns $14,500 a year. Even with the tax relief we put in place, a family with two kids that earns the minimum wage still is below the poverty line. That's wrong. That's why, since the last time Congress raised the minimum wage, 19 states have chosen to bump theirs even higher.
Boy, he had a big segment on the minimum wage last night. But I don't remember any of that. Because he was talking about the Costco people raising their minimum wage last night. I'm going to say that's from 2013. Yeah.
That's right. But he did mention the minimum wage last night.
Which is all you have to know about this stupid speech last night. Yeah.
All right. Next one. We also have the chance right now to beat other countries in the race for the next wave of high-tech manufacturing jobs. And my administration's launched two hubs for high-tech manufacturing in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Youngstown, Ohio, where we've connected businesses to research universities that can help America lead the world in advanced technologies.
Yeah, this could be either or. I'm just going to guess 2014.
2014. Okay, next up. If the Afghan government signs a security agreement that we have negotiated, a small force of Americans could remain in Afghanistan with NATO allies to carry out two narrow missions: training and assisting Afghan forces in counterterrorism operations to pursue any remnants of Al-Qaeda, For while our relationship with Afghanistan will change, one thing will not. Our resolve that terrorists do not launch attacks against our country.
That's 13.
That is 14.
That was last night?
Yes, it was. Okay,
all right.
Here's the next one. Already, we have brought home 33,000 of our brave servicemen and women. This spring, our forces will move into a support role while Afghan security forces take the lead. Tonight, I can announce that over the next year, another 34,000 American troops will come home from Afghanistan. This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
That's 13.
That's 2013.
Yeah.
He could have said that in either year, but he did say it would be over.
Well, this is one of the promises he had made during his campaign, that
right.
by 14
right.
we'll have the war ended. So we'll see.
All right, four quotes from did 3-1.
3-1, yeah, that's not too bad.
Which is really pretty good, because in going back and reading 2013 State of the Union address, yeah. they're pretty much the same speech.
Yeah, you can't say he plagiarized because it's his speech, but it almost was a cut and paste. You know what I mean? Like, he just left out any kind of date-type references.
Well, you're right. And a couple of things you read from this year, you're like, no, he said that last year.
Yeah. He just changed the players, right? He brought in a different anecdotal evidence to support it.
All right. So another scintillating edition of Know Your Obama.
Yes.
Fran nails it again, going 3-1. All right, so that's a signal for tonight's Politician of the Podcast. Tonight, unfortunately, I have to reference MSNBC again, specifically the incredibly ridiculous Rachel Maddow show. After the inauguration, she was having a discussion with Representative Tim Huelskamp, Republican from Kansas, and they were arguing. He had been sending out some really kind of ridiculous tweets, but they were not tongue-in-cheek. What's the word I'm looking for?
They were sarcastic.
They're sarcastic.
He like was talking about incredulous.
Yeah,
about
he was talking about King Obama,
yeah.
And well, he made the one she tried to take him to task on is he made a tweet that did an ambassador really die in Benghazi, and it was his way of saying nothing. You know, you've told us nothing,
right? And you're not even bringing it up. Like you're completely ignoring the fact that an ambassador
you're completely
died.
Ignoring it. He wasn't saying that ambassador didn't die
right.
in Benghazi. Well, she. She grills him on this, like, are you saying that an ambassador didn't give his life for the service of our country? And he's kind of blown through it. Now, he's not particularly well-spoken.
Yeah, plus, I don't think he realized that she took it literally. Like,
I know, yeah.
She actually thought that's what he was saying.
I have to think that he knew that and just refused to address it, but you can't tell by watching the thing. And you should YouTube it if you don't get a chance. Anyways, here's why I put him on Politician of the Podcast. At one point, he calls her a cheerleader. He says, well, you're just a cheerleader for the... And she goes, did you just call me a cheerleader? And he goes, well, yeah. You know, I don't know if that's in your past or whatever, but yeah, I did. And she goes, no. Wait a minute. Stop. Right? Like she's infuriated because he made this sexist comment. And he basically just said, yeah, you're a cheerleader for the Obama administration and just went on. And it was just... I don't know how this woman continues to have a show.
Well, because that network needs people, and that's the only place she could be hired.
Boy, it's hard to imagine they can't find somebody
better
than that.
She could never get to CNN. She couldn't even get on CNN with that. Well, Blitzer would never allow her in his newsroom.
Yeah.
They're not making news on MSNBC. They're making things up. Like, and here's the big difference between CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. On the weekend, you get news at CNN, you get news at Fox. On MSNBC, you get a lockup marathon where they do these prison stories. That's not a joke. I mean... It's from noon on Saturday and Sunday. It's these marathons about these prison stories. It's not even a news channel. It's impossible to watch anymore. I'm a person who advocates. Don't sit here and tell me about the other side if you've not at least listened to their opinion. I wouldn't in good faith direct anyone to listen to MSNBC because it's horrible. It's just horrible.
Right, and she in particular is horrible.
Well, she's the band leader now. The Olbermann is gone. Right.
Yeah, okay, so tonight's Politician of the Podcast, Representative Tim Huelskamp, Republican from Kansas.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Signs of the apocalypse, friend. What's your sign of the apocalypse tonight?
It may not be game over, my friend. I'm going anti-apocalypse on tonight because we maybe pump some life back into this dreary winter. It turns out scientists have recalculated the extinction of the sun.
No.
And apparently the nuclear energy that powers the core of the sun is something that can be quantified from here. And their calculations have pushed the demise of the sun as the star in our universe, or in our solar system, rather, back like 100 million years or something. So the sun is burning itself out, but it's just not going to do it for a lot longer than we thought. So the Earth has just been re-upped. We got a new contract extension.
So I'm probably good for the next 25 or 30 years. Is that what you're saying here, friend?
I'm thinking you're good, yeah. So, yeah, we'll long be pushing up daisies by the time this happens. But some good news for planet Earth. What shape we'll be in at that point, who knows? But the end is not near for quite a while.
Well, I've frequently been accused of bringing some dire predictions to signs of the apocalypse.
You're a wet blanket, man. I mean, you're an apocalyptic wet blanket.
Tonight may be the most direst yet.
God. Is that a word, direst?
Direst. Did I just make that up? Okay. I have two. One, Motley Crue says they're going to retire.
Oh, it's crushing.
But not until after they finish a 72-city tour.
But they mean it. They signed a contract. They signed a contract that they would not reunite.
So the Crue will be no more after this. Unlike Kiss, who've done, let's say, 5 or 6 retirement tours? I don't know.
Right. Well, the money is in the retirement. You know, that's where the money's to be made once you retire to go on retirement tours.
Gene Simmons gave a quote one time when they asked him, you know, did you ever mean it? And he said, well, it was always true until it wasn't. My second sign of the apocalypse, Cher and Cyndi Lauper going on tour. Fran, how old is Cher? How old could she be?
If we're taking bets, I'm saying 80, right? I mean,
I have no idea. And the name of the tour, Dressed to Kill. Yeesh.
Yeah.
I think that maybe she should just tour with the Stones, and they could both not have sex together and go to bed at 7:30. I don't know, but I didn't even know the woman sang anymore. So, yeah.
That's a loose term. I'm going to go on a limb here and say there's going to be a tape recorder somewhere and some lip syncing happening.
I could be making some assumptions there.
Although, now Tracy will be laughing at me because I said tape recorder. It'll be an iPod somewhere.
All right, so that's my signs of the apocalypse. Two pop bands going. Well, Cher doesn't say it's her last tour. She's just going with Cyndi Lauper. So,
Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper. Wrapping up another edition of Unfiltered and Unfettered. One thing I wanted to mention before we go off here, Fran, is we'd like to ask people to go to iTunes, do a podcast search on Unfiltered and Unfettered, write us a review if you got a few minutes. That would help us out. We've got a few reviews. We're getting a lot of listeners. I know it'll take a few minutes, but it would help us out for you to give us a review. We'd sure appreciate it. What's going on over on Frank's place?
Oh, well, we got picked up by a blog.
That's right. The SEC writer,
which writes about all the sports in the Southeastern Conference. They contacted me during the Snowmageddon, and they wanted to use one of my blog stories about the kids growing up in a divided house. My wife went to the University of Kentucky, was homecoming queen in 94. I went to grad school at UT for a couple classes. And I'm a Tennessee fan, so we're a divided household. And I wrote a story about Frank being pulled in between that, and so they wanted to use it. And so I said, absolutely, go ahead and use it. And then it was kind of weird to see my name under the by Francis M. Leonardo.
Right.
And then they offered wanted to know if I'd be interested in writing about Tennessee sports in the near future. So it might be a follow on gig to come here.
Nice. Well, that'd be great. All right, wrapping up another edition of Unfiltered Unfettered. Appreciate the listen. Everybody stay safe out there. Survive through the climate change. Spring.
Remember, it's not your fault.
It's not your fault. Don't do anything drastic. Just use them funny little light bulbs and just go on with your business. So, all right, hey, we love you all. Keep your brain sharp. And until next time, Elisa, hey, please take us out.
Thanks, Tony and Fran, for getting us unfiltered and unfettered.